You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, here's something that rarely happens with me. President Trump put a burr under my saddle today.
Oh, my. It must have been serious.
Well, I think it's potentially serious, okay? It's the guy just can't leave his Twitter account alone.
Yeah, I know. He talks too much sometimes.
He really does. And I think it's beneath the office. So what am I talking about? This most recent brouhaha with, I think, the best attorney general we've ever had in my lifetime, and that's William Barr. And President Trump is tweeting up a storm in regards to, you know, this issue with Roger Stone and the sentencing, which I want to talk about later. But the more important issue is there's things that a president of the United States just needs to leave alone. And this Twitter account has been a good thing for him, but it's also been a bad thing for him. And where I cross the line is when you screw up with your tweets and you potentially hurt the United States of America, because you're going to tick off who I think is the best attorney general we've ever had. And you just can't do that because of a few things. Number one, A.G. Barr has been the attorney general before, and he came back basically out of retirement. He doesn't need this job. He's a patriot, and he's in here to fix the United States Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they need to be fixed. Number two, as I said, it's beneath the office of the President of the United States. And what he's going to do, if he keeps pushing this thing, Barr is going to say, hey, look, and I think he's already said it, look, I don't need this. I don't need the pressure. I don't need the additional controversy. I don't need the media storm that this creates, because 93% of the media is against the President of the United States. And I'm doing everything that I possibly can. And we see a lot of demonstrative evidence of this. Barr is trying to fix the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he's trying to fix the United States Department of Justice and the FBI, and they need to be fixed, and he's the guy to fix it.
Oh, I agree, and he's pretty much keeping it under the radar. He's doing it quietly. He's not out there broadcasting what he's doing. He's just taking care of business. And I think that that was his issue, is he doesn't want Trump involved in these things, because the issue was enough where we had the prosecutors quit in the Stone trial.
People that were involved in the Stone trial,
you know, sure. I mean, sorry, but they were big babies about it.
Well, they were also conflicted. Two of them were donors to the Democratic
Party. Exactly. And we can talk more about the jury as well. But the thing is that Trump doesn't need to antagonize those people that are on his side and those people who are doing the work of the president. He doesn't need to make it harder for them. And I totally agree with you there. Sometimes he just needs to be quiet.
Oh, my God. Look at what we've gone through in the past 8 years. Okay, we had to put up with Eric Holder, who was just a train wreck that did more to damage. He was right up there with Obama, damaging law enforcement and community relations.
Absolutely.
The just tremendously embarrassing cases like Fast and Furious. And I mean, believe me, I could name a litany of cases that Eric Holder was involved in. And I'll tell you what, one thing that you can say about President Trump's administration and the all of the people in his administration, they didn't do anything that killed people, okay? Whereas if you look under the Obama administration with Eric Holder, the Fast and Furious killed one of our border protection agents, okay? And his Secretary of State pretty much was involved in such negligence that it caused, you know, our people in Benghazi to die, including our ambassador.
Yes.
Okay, a Libyan ambassador. And so when you get somebody in there like William Barr, who is a true patriot and a true believer in upholding the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights, you don't want to antagonize that guy, okay, because he just doesn't need it.
Yeah, and I think that Trump really could have handled this in a different way. He could have just let it play out, and he always has the option of pardoning Roger Stone. And that would have been done better quietly, because now what he's done is Nancy Pelosi comes out on the news,
of course,
and gives a big speech about how President Trump is trying to influence a jury decision and a judge's decision, which is not the case, which is not what happened. President Trump didn't influence Barr to do that.
Well,
Barr did that on his own. But the thing is that they use it as talking points
absolutely.
To get the American people to believe things that are not true, which always, always frustrates me that our people that we elect are not honest with the American people.
Well, you know, that's right, Linda. And one thing that I want to piggyback on that you talked about is that, look, we just got off of the impeachment issue. The president of the United States was acquitted. That was a big win for him. And come on, let's move forward to another win. Let's not open up our mouths and our Twitter accounts and create yet another controversy, because that's what, as you've indicated, that's what the Democrats want. Because the talking points that I was hearing today, and this is what really aggravated me, is that they're saying he's intimidating the United States Attorney General and the Department of Justice, which causes Bill Barr, who is a very quiet professional, as you indicated, to have to step forward and push back against the President of the United States. That is never a win-win situation.
No.
And the thing that gets me, and I think a high school kid could get this, you don't need to do this. You don't need to be opening your mouth and your Twitter account and creating more controversy, because they're just waiting for you to do stuff like this.
Well, exactly. And the fact is that the country as a whole is tired of this. We're tired of the controversy. We want to just move forward. We have an election to deal with. The election, in my opinion, is going to be nasty.
It'll be the nastiest.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of lies. It's just going to be, you know, like I said before, hold on to your seats, because it's going to be a heck of a ride. And I think that that's going to be true. And we're, you know, getting right into the heart of it right now. We don't need all the distractions, and we don't need the president to do things that are going to detract people from voting from him because he's too controversial.
Boy, you put your finger right on it, the spotlight on distracting. This is distracting. And that was one of the things when I was driving home tonight, and I'm listening to this on the radio, and this comes up, and I'm going, oh, my God, you know, another unnecessary distraction. Okay, and that's
right.
Exactly what it is. But I want to go back over a little bit of the history of this with Roger Stone and some of the things that angered me about this. And I know you and I had a discussion some months ago about how law enforcement, you know, federal officers came over to Roger Stone's house and took him into custody.
Yeah, okay. After notifying CNN that they'd be there.
Exactly. So they had, I don't know, I think they had like 16 cars. They had about 30 agents. Roger Stone lives in Florida. He lives on a, what do you call it, like a canal, like a lot of people
right.
do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well-to-do people in Florida live in these little canals, which are pretty cute. But they even had a patrol boat with guys with machine guns on this patrol boat. And then,
just in case this 67-year-old man and his wife ran out and jumped into the water. I mean, come on.
Yeah, got in their speedboat to escape.
Jumped on the Sea-Doo
and then I saw the surveillance camera from Roger Stone's house. And I hadn't seen this before, and I saw it yesterday, and you've got heavily armed federal officers, I mean, with assault rifles in the middle of the night to take this guy into custody. Okay, listen, I've been there and done that and got the T-shirt. Okay, I've kicked down more doors than more people can even imagine with tactical teams. This is an arrest by appointment type of deal.
Yes.
Okay, how I would have handled this as a special agent in charge of this arrest, as I would have said, we're not doing any of this. What we're going to do is, I know that Roger Stone is represented by counsel. I'm going to call up counsel. I'm going to say, we have an arrest warrant for your client, and please bring your client to our offices on such and such a date and such a time, and we will place him under arrest. We will process him. We'll take him to the jail. You can arrange bail. You can do whatever you want, because these are nonviolent crimes that this guy was convicted of.
Well,
nonviolent,
you know, Ron,
crimes.
I want people to really think about this. So you are a person in your 60s, and you are sound asleep in your home at night, sound asleep in the middle of the night.
And I think his wife had hearing problems,
she has hearing,
right?
Problems, very serious hearing problems. So all of a sudden, your door is busted down, and people...
In the dark, because the lights are out.
A lot of people come in with
automatic
weapons.
Weapons,
and they're pointing them around at you, and they're ordering you around. I mean, first of all, you're disoriented, you're frightened. I definitely would be. I mean, I wake up with any little sound in our home, no matter what.
And you know, and here's the deal too: we're both armed. Okay, so I mean, you know, people that would come into our house in the middle of the night when you're disoriented with automatic weapons, I mean, you know, you may take a shot at one of them, for God's sakes,
and
somebody's going to blow you up.
And that would be reasonable. And the thing is that had he done that, he would be dead as we speak.
But can you imagine the embarrassment for the federal
agencies?
It
would not be embarrassment, because I half believe that that's what they're hoping for, because they were so upset. Mueller's team was so upset about not getting anything on Trump that they were going to make a big spectacle out of Roger Stone. Roger Stone, who, in my opinion, as just an average American, yeah, he did nothing that was a big deal. I mean, we see child abusers, we see murderers, we see drug dealers, we see burglars, robbers, rapists, all kinds of people get off with nothing all the time. And this guy, you know, he had some just a technical thing with the whole FBI, whoever was investigating him. Okay, but I'm sorry, it was no big deal in the scheme of things as crimes go.
You know, as a retired law enforcement officer, and this may surprise people, but I'm not defending Roger Stone, okay?
I'm not defending him either.
I know, but just to be clear, mm-hmm. Okay, so you and I are not defending Roger Stone. Okay, Roger Stone was an advisor of the President of the United States. Undoubtedly, he was targeted because of that, but I'm not going to defend him, because if you committed a crime, then you committed a crime. Okay, so if factually you committed a crime, you should be penalized for that.
But however, there are crimes and there are crimes.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. Now, part of it, this is going to be very, very mucky, because a lot of this stuff is coming out right now. Apparently, people on the jury had some conflicts of interest. Right?
Big conflicts of interest.
Not little ones,
yeah.
Big ones. But it just shows you how uninformed and actually stupid people that are involved in federal agencies can be. Because one of the first things that you do, and I'm surprised his defense attorney didn't do this, because what am I talking about? You're checking. So once you get the list of the jury, okay, because you do in a big case like that, you're going to get the jury list. Both sides get the jury list because they have peremptory challenges to these jurors. And in a lot of cases, and I don't know if this was the case in the Stone case, you actually make out a questionnaire.
You make out a questionnaire. Okay? I've been on a jury that was a little itty-bitty jury for a little itty-bitty
crime.
Make
out a questionnaire?
I made out a questionnaire.
Yeah, you know, I've never been on a jury for obvious reasons. But I can tell you the other side of it, at least when I'm involved in defending, I have investigators that do social media checks on jurors. All right.
And they should be, and especially in a high-profile case like this with one of the president's advisors. So somebody really dropped the ball, but it also could be that one of the jurors may not have told the truth. I don't know what the case is.
And that happens too.
But when you have one of the jurors that ran for Congress
on the Democratic side
and has a whole bunch of social media that is
negative to the president.
Yes, negative to the president. And talks about Roger Stone in their tweets.
That person is history.
That person should be history. There should be a mistrial on this case. Now, if President Trump wanted Roger Stone to be over this, and in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, he probably did commit a crime. He was found guilty, although I think he was found guilty by a biased jury. But either way, if he committed a crime, he deserves some punishment. I don't think that these crimes deserve jail time.
Well, you know, let me just go back over a couple of things. And we were talking about this the other night. And that is, the people in the media and the politicians have totally misrepresented what the sentencing is all about, how the sentencing goes. Okay, once you're convicted of a crime, there is a protocol that takes place. And DOJ has a part in it. United States Federal Probation has a part in it. And the sentencing judge has a part of it. So none of these things are done arbitrarily or capriciously. And there is actually a formula that you use for sentencing where many different things are taken into consideration. Now, what happened is that the federal prosecutors, who I believe were completely biased against Roger Stone and angry because he wasn't cooperating with them, they put together a recommendation of sentencing from something between 7 and 9 years for what he did, which is absolutely ridiculous. And then we didn't hear from federal probation and what federal probation has to do a workup. They do an entire study on the individual, his background, you know, all of these things. And then they make a recommendation to the judge. The judge takes a look at all of this stuff and he finalizes the sentencing. In other words, he takes a little bit of look at this, what the prosecutors are saying, what federal probation is saying, what Mr. Stone's background is, his ability to rehabilitate. He looks at remorse. He looks at, you know, a whole bunch of things like that. And then he makes a decision as to what the sentencing is going to be.
Ron, I don't know if you remember, but we had a conversation a while back about a young man who had murdered somebody, and the judge gave him probation because he just felt that, you know, in this instance, that it was warranted that jail wouldn't do any good. So the sentencing, it's a big thing to me to have fair sentencing across the board for everybody in the country. And we really need to get there because we don't. And this whole thing is, like you say, it's not helped by Trump's tweets. Trump should just kind of stay out of it.
Right. No, I agree. And I hope he learns a lesson from this. I don't think he will.
No, I don't think he will.
And what I'm worried about, because I'm starting to understand this guy after 3 years, and by the way, I mean, you know, I am a huge supporter of President Trump, you know, 90% of the time. And then 10% of the time, he does something that makes me want to bang my head against the wall, or, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, what are you thinking? But this clearly needs to stop, this because it's unnecessary, okay? It's immature, it's unnecessary, and it's beneath the office of the President of the United States. And I am hoping, and I hope maybe our friends and listeners would take this and share it somewhere with somebody in his administration. But look, if you get two common sense conservative people like ourselves criticizing the president of the United States, and we're huge supporters of President Trump, then you better pay attention. You better not, ignore what people like us are saying, because we're not the only ones. Because when we get together with people that are like-minded, we're all talking the same stuff. Everybody's pretty much on the same sheet of music. We want to row in all in the same direction, but every once in a while, he's rowing against us.
Well, we don't want him to shoot himself in the foot, because if he goes, so go all of us.
Oh, and that's my point.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and that's that about that.
Okay, well, how about some coffee?
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
So I want to talk about coronavirus, because it's really getting to be a much larger problem than we thought.
Well, I figured once it started spreading, and I saw that the incubation period was 2 weeks, and you think about the millions of people that travel in and out of China monthly, and they travel internationally, how could it not spread all over the world?
Well, and we're hoping that it is stopped, and we're hoping that some of the companies that are working on medicines to stop this in its tracks will come up with a solution. And I'm hearing that there are some successful trials, but we have a ways to go. But in the meantime, this coronavirus is just exponentially exploding. And, so what is a coronavirus, and why do they call it that? A coronavirus is one of, a number of different viruses that can affect mammals and people. And they cause respiratory infections, including things like the common cold or a stuffy nose, or things like...
And there's respiratory issues.
Respiratory issues is the big one. But it also can eventually cause a lot of other problems, like kidney failure and... things like that, which is how you end up passing away from this.
Right.
So at this time, there are no drugs and no antivirals that can treat it. So your body is going to have to work itself through, or not.
Well, and just like influenza, and this is what it's kind of like to me, at least for my context to understand it, a serious form of influenza, is that the people most susceptible to it, of course, just like with influenza, just like with pneumonia, are elderly people and very, very young people, right? And kids and babies.
Well, but what's interesting about this virus to me is it really has killed some people that appear to be very, very healthy. So that's really worrisome. And by the way, this also, like I said, it passes to other mammals. So in in things like chickens, it represents itself as a respiratory infection. In things like pigs, it represents itself as diarrhea. So generally, what's happening is people are getting diarrhea as their first symptom, and then they're getting the whole respiratory thing going on. So right now, just as of the time that we're talking, the coronavirus has 44,688 cases in China and 1,116 deaths. Now, those numbers vary a lot. There's people that say 1,300. There's people that say different numbers. But what's interesting to me, Ron, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going on around this, and I don't know what's true and what's not true, so I want to talk to you about them because this is a scary virus. It's already passed the SARS numbers, and it's very contagious, and I think that it's going to go, well, it's already in a lot of countries, so let's talk about that real quick. It's in China, obviously, in the huge numbers.
Well, in the Wuxi district, right, in the Wuxi area of China, and then spreading out all over China.
And it's, and by the way, just as an aside to that comment, the factories there who just got off their Chinese New Year's holiday are not even able to open. So if people have orders from China,
like you do,
like I do, you're not going to be getting them. But Japan has 202 cases. So that's getting up there. That
well,
has
it's right next
substantially
to China.
Increased.
It's right next to China.
And
there's
so
a lot of travel between those two countries.
So is North Korea, who denies having even a single case. Well, now, there was a report that there was somebody that got it and that they shot him. So I don't know what's true. We don't know what's true out of North Korea. Hong Kong, 49 cases. Singapore, 47 cases. Thailand, 33. South Korea, 28.
And how many in the United States?
The United States has, at this time, I think that they had somewhere around 12.
And the majority of those cases are in California, aren't they?
Yeah, and that number is going, 13 cases. That number is going up because San Diego just, you know, they're bringing people in on the planes and landing there.
They're bringing in Riverside County and March Air Force Base.
And some of those people actually are developing the disease.
And down in Miramar, they were talking about bringing them into Ontario, which is one of our favorite airports. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that the Chinese are underreporting?
I absolutely do think that they're underreporting, and I think that they're underreporting by a lot.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. I have nothing to base that on other than how fast this seems to be spreading.
Well, you know, you were talking about conspiracy theories, and I hate conspiracy theories, being a forensic guy and you know, someone that investigates medical issues for a living. And so I'm not going to, delve into conspiracy theories. In other words, I'm not going to support any conspiracy theories because that's all they are. But I want to know, like with the Center for Disease Control and the Chinese equivalent of that, if they isolated, you know, the cause or the, you know, the epicenter, what created this. And what I first heard is that people consuming bats, because Chinese consume all sorts of animals, bats being one of them, and I've actually seen pictures of bat soup. God, you know, bats are well known to carry, you know, so many different viruses and rabies and, you know, all these different things. I can't even imagine people eating, you know, bats. But that's what I heard. And then as far as a conspiracy theory, and you know what, Linda, you hear this about other diseases that come up. You know, we heard this about Ebola years and years ago and stuff, that it was a horrible biological, you know, warfare experiment that basically got out of the test tube and infected people. But, you know, I haven't seen any confirmation of that. And the only thing I keep hearing is it is associated with animals and Chinese consuming animals and then passing that on. So, I mean, until we get some vetted information from credible medical sources, I'm going to pass on the whole.
Well, and so, you know, just to
theory thing.
To say what the theories are is that it was due to some research on biological weapons and it escaped, and that's, you know, how this got started. I don't know what's true and what's not true. It doesn't matter to me at this second what's true and what's not true. What we're dealing with is a possible pandemic worldwide here. And the reason why I think that the numbers are seriously underreported is because they don't have enough medical beds, enough medical people, enough testing that can be done in the province where this started. And it is so exponentially exploding. I mean, every day there's thousands of new cases reported that you have to look at the numbers that are not being reported because people cannot get to the hospital. There's no hospital to go to because they're full. So you have to look at those numbers.
I think that's important. Did you see some of the pictures of that gigantic tent city hospital that the Chinese built almost overnight in the Wuxi, China? Just absolutely incredible. There was some estimates that it held over 30,000 beds. And I mean, I saw pictures of it, and it was tremendous. And the fact that they built it in like a week was absolutely incredible. But they are completely overwhelmed, like you said. That bothers me. And then this whole incubation period of 14 days really bothers me, because you know what they're saying is, at least some of what I've heard is that when the people that are coming into the United States are tested, basically they take their temperature to see if they're feverish.
Right.
But I'm telling you, if the incubation period is 14 days, you're not, and you're here like on the second day or something, you're not going to show evidence of fever. I keep calling it the Wushu, but it's actually Wuhan. So, as far as the city is concerned, I think that the population of that city is huge.
It's huge,
right? I mean,
yeah.
It's in the millions.
Yes, it's in the millions.
Okay,
but like I said, the numbers are exponentially increasing every day, and what they're saying is that, let's just say that you live in an apartment house, and in China, a lot of people live in very tight quarters. Okay,
high density is
the word. Yeah, very high density. And what's happening is this virus apparently is going right through the heating and air conditioning systems, if they even have it. But it's going through the ventilation system. It's going through the walls. It's going through where people touch things. And the whole apartment houses are getting it.
So, yeah, and I haven't done a lot of studying on this, Linda. Is this an airborne virus? It sounds like it's airborne.
Well, it's transmitted in a number of ways, actually. So it's transmitted by coughing and sneezing and those types of things. It also can be transmitted by touching something that somebody who's infected has touched.
Okay.
Say you go to the restroom after them.
Sure.
It also has been shown to be transmitted by people who have had diarrhea before the rest of the symptoms come into effect, and it has been transmitted that way. Maybe they didn't wash their hands well.
Or,
maybe
got
somebody
some splash on the toilet or whatever. Somebody else sits down on it.
So the primary method of transmission seems to be airborne.
And did you say it can be transmitted from animals to human and humans to animals?
Yes.
See, that's it, because the respiratory systems are similar.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so very scary stuff. Now, put it in perspective, where we've had
Influenza
in the United States, and that has already, you had the numbers on that.
Yeah, we were talking about some of the numbers, and they're scary numbers to boot. I mean, something like 30,000 fatalities in the 2018-2019 year as far as, basic influenza. And you see people dying, especially senior citizens, dying from influenza and from pneumonia, all the time. So it's, when you get these viruses, and of course you and I get our flu shots every year during the beginning of flu season, which is, October, November. And it's interesting to note that, every time we get a shot, it's for the previous identified flu, because they're always playing, catch up football, and, trying to get the flu serum, it takes them a whole year to figure out, you know, how to counteract it. And by then, you know, the next flu virus is mutated to something else. And what you're basically getting immunized for is past identified influenza strains.
Yeah, I wonder if next year when we get our shot, it's going to be a corona shot.
Boy, I don't know.
Well, but that would be good if they come out with something. You know, then you have the people that are on the cruise ship, which is sitting out in the water still.
That's a sad and scary situation.
There was 428 U.S. citizens on that ship. Probably still are on the ship, I don't know. But multiple U.S. passengers tested positive for the coronavirus.
Well, you know, the scary thing is that ship attempted to dock in four different countries and was denied entry.
Well, and, you know, thank goodness for that. Because look at all the other people that would be infected, because a lot of people on that ship are infected.
Well, and I'm sure that you don't not only have the passengers, but you've got the crew, for God's sakes.
And I'm sure that they're infecting other people on the ship as we speak, because you can't help it because you're in close quarters.
Well, and you're using recirculated air unless you're standing outside all the time. You know, you're in your rooms, you're in dining areas, you're in gaming areas, casinos, all the different movie theaters, you're in all of these places where people congregate and they're breathing and air is being recirculated. So that doesn't surprise me in the least. I just feel so bad for people that are virtually on a floating island with no place to go.
Well, I think that people need to pay attention and they need to be aware of the symptoms, which is fever, cough, sneezing, similar to the flu, similar to a cold. But it can go very wrong very fast.
Yeah, and just reminding people that they really have to wash their hands constantly. They should have some of the stuff that you give out in promotional products, Linda. You know, some of those liquid hand cleansers,
yep.
Antibacterial
mm-hmm. Yes.
Hand cleansers and things like that.
Which are actually invaluable for just throwing in your pocket or your purse.
Oh, yeah.
They really are.
They're very cheap,
yeah.
and they're easy to pack around. And also, you know, when they go into the grocery stores, use those alcohol hand wipes and wipe down the handles of your cart, you know, when you're going around, because, you know, 100 people, 200 people might touch that cart in a day.
Well, and I think that if people get symptoms in the U.S., they need to be checked right away, get the test, and make sure that if it is that we pull that person out into quarantine for the time that they're ill. And, you know, by the way, most people do recover from this. By far, most people recover from
and
having
we are
the coronavirus.
Seeing that. You know, we are getting news reports of people recovering.
If there's 44,000 that have it and 1,300 have died, then obviously the vast majority survived. But the key is that you don't want to give it to your grandmother and you don't want to give it to somebody who's compromised in any way medically.
You know, one of the things I'm worried about, of course, with the Chinese, because it is a communist government, they can do whatever they want. There's no freedom of speech. And they've been basically disappearing journalists that have been reporting on this. And of course, remember the young doctor,
yes,
who was the first person to start spreading the word, and I think he started spreading the word to his colleagues in medical school. Hey, you got to watch out for this thing. And the Chinese, I don't know whether they arrested him, but they definitely detained him, and he subsequently died from the coronavirus, and he was a young man in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you know, there's a site that people can go to
find
daily information on how this is spreading and where it's spreading and how many cases there are and the symptoms and all the information. It's called www.coronavirusupdate.com.
And they can also go to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control.org, .gov, Center for Disease Control.gov, and you can get similar information as well as all the statistics, because the other day we were talking about that, and I did a show on Viewpoint with Malcolm Out Loud on America Out Loud, and we were talking about the coronavirus, and I was charged with getting all the statistics together. So, of course, I go right to the CDC.
And that may be even better than the BBC, which is where this site is from, and it's actually from the information from China.
Yeah, well, because I've used a lot of statistics before in other types of medical investigations I've done, I really do prefer the CDC because I think it's a pretty vetted governmental agency that comes out with pretty accurate information.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I think I've told you more than a couple of times that before my law enforcement career, I was a high school teacher and I was a track and field coach and coached both men's and women's sports. So there's a story in the news, and this has popped up two or three times, about transgender athletes. And what I'm referring to when I say transgender, it's not, these are males that are biologically male.
Yes.
That state that they feel that they're female, but everything about them is male. Okay, all their muscularity, everything, their biological gender is male. They've got all their genitalia that's male genitalia, and what we're seeing increasingly in women's track and field, and I think we're seeing this in some other sports, but because I was a track and field guy and a coach, I just want to talk about the track and field side of it because I know a lot about it, and so these men that can't make it. Really, on the men's track team for one reason or another, they've decided that they're going to claim that they are female and they want to compete and have been competing in female sports at the high school level and I think in the college level. And what they're doing is they're devastating the biological female athletes, and they're just killing them. I mean, as far as being out on the track, they are so powerful and so fast that the women place way back in the pack. It's so unfair.
Well, biologically, male athletes have inherent physiological advantages over females in some sports, and even if they keep their testosterone levels down, that's not enough, according to scientists, to counteract those inherent differences.
Exactly.
So we have Megan Youngren, who is a transgender athlete, who is biologically a male, who is now going to be trying out for the U.S. Olympic marathon trials in the women's field. And the women are pretty upset about it.
Well, they should be. And so what brings us to light again, and I don't know if we've ever had a discussion about this, but so three different girls in Connecticut from different high schools, one from Canton High School, one from Glastonbury High School, and one from Danbury High School, have filed a Title IX suit. That Title IX deals with athletics and fairness in athletic between male and female athletes and funding and access and accommodation and, all of these different things. And Title IX has been around for a long time. When I was coaching, we had Title IX, and what they're saying is that these males that are claiming to be females but have, other than just claiming to be females, they have no female genitalia. They haven't been transitioned, surgically transitioned to be females. And there simply are people that are saying that they feel like they're females and they're competing against them. And they're basically just wiping them right off the track. So they have decided to file a Title IX suit with the United States Department of Education. And now the USDOE, their Civil Rights Division, is taking a look at it. And attorneys from the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a nonprofit Christian organization providing legal counsel to these women and furthering this lawsuit. And I have to be honest, with all due respect to the LGBTQ community, this is wrong. It's just wrong. And it's going to destroy female sports.
Well, I don't disagree with you there. I do have a couple of different opinions. But, you know, first, here's some other examples. You have June Eastwood, who's a biologically male runner at the University of Montana, who identifies as a transgender, was named Big Sky Conference Female Athlete of the Week last October. And he previously competed on the university men's cross-country team. Then you have, at Franklin Pierce University, a runner, CeCe Telfer, who won the NCAA Division II Women's Track Championship last May. And again, he had previously competed on the men's team. This is very hard and unfair to women. That being said, Ron, I don't know exactly what the right answer is, because I feel for these people who, if they truly are identifying as women, and they don't want to just get ahead, you know, in their sport, and they're truly identifying as women, they'd probably feel very out of place on a men's team. And then they go to the women's team, and it's patently unfair to the women. I think that they should make a separate category.
I'm glad you said that, because when you said, is there a way that we can, that these people can celebrate, you know, their transgenderism, if that's even a word. And that's exactly what I was going to say as a former coach. Listen, there needs to be a level playing field in all athletics, okay? A level playing field. And this is not creating a level playing field, because what these trans athletes do, for whatever their motivation, let's just talk about factually what they do. Let's take the emotion out of this, because everybody gets all emotionally engaged. And instead of thinking logically, think about how we celebrate who we are. Okay? Think about that. How do we celebrate who we are? How do men celebrate who they are? How do women celebrate who they are? How does the LGBTQ community celebrate who they are? And how we celebrate who we are as athletes, this is Dr. Ron's personal opinion as an athlete, former athlete, is that we create a fairness and a level playing field for all of our athletes. Okay, now, there's always going to be good athletes and not so good athletes. There's always going to be winners and there's always going to be losers. But the suggestion that I think you and I have is that there needs to be separate athletic competition for trans women, okay,
or
trans men.
However, it goes both ways.
Because you need to have people of the same athletic abilities competing against each other. Okay.
Well, it's interesting because former U.S. Olympic athlete Rebecca Dussault, she was speaking with the Daily Caller, and she made a really good point, and that is that once a male body, and I'm quoting this, has gone through puberty, they have received the benefits already.
Yes,
so
I agree.
The skeletal form,
absolutely,
the lung capacity, the
absolutely,
muscle density, the greater length of levers in their body, their muscle weight to ratio,
yep,
the capacity to deal with dehydration, narrower hips, all these things are already, you know, you already,
sure,
are those things. So when you make those changes, that all still remains the same. And it is totally unfair to women. Now, I want them to have a place to compete. And I would watch them the same as I would watch anybody else. But it's not fair to take them and really ruin the sport for the women that are running and whatever sport it is, that participating in that sport.
Right. And let's talk about how it does ruin them, because as a guy that coached women's sports, I totally get it. You know, I've been with my female athletes when they were crying, when they were distraught. just with a regular, just with regular sexuality, okay, just women competing against women. And what happens in something like this is that you deny women who are biological women, you deny them opportunity. These women, just like men, they work out so darn hard. You know, being an athlete and the higher level of athleticism that you're involved in, from high school to, which is interscholastic, to college and university, to semi-pro, which is athletic competition at the Olympic level, to going up to regular pro sports, if we were talking about, you know, basketball, football, all of these different things, baseball. You deny these people, these up-and-coming athletes, skilled athletes that work out day and night. You deny them the opportunity of having fair competition. You deny them the opportunity to have scholarships, right, so that they can move forward, like interscholastic and getting it. Like, for instance, I was on scholarship, okay, when I went to the university from high school. I was on an athletic scholarship. I would be devastated knowing how hard I worked out when I was in high school to get into college, because my folks were having a little bit of a hard time, with regards to, paying for college and stuff like that. And so I, like many athletes, like many people do, got an athletic scholarship. And it was a big deal when I got it, okay? And I would have been devastated had I been denied that for unfair reasons.
Well, I feel really badly for the women who maybe they hold a record in an event.
Sure.
Their records are all going to fall. And
well, they are falling. They're not going to fall. They are falling.
How would you feel to be a woman? Of course, you wouldn't know this, but how would I feel to be a woman who has worked and worked and worked to get to this level, and somebody that just says that they identify, whether they truly do or not, is irrelevant to me.
And I
they're
think
still
you're right.
Biologically,
not the same.
They're not the same, and that's just unfair to women. And I think it's going to just destroy sports for women.
Oh, I do, and I think the feminists, the people that celebrate being women and that encourage womanhood and empower women, these women have got to get in line here, and they have got to support biological females.
The other thing that has to happen,
and not be intimidated by the LGBTQ community, because that's intimidation, and they should not do that. They should stick up for women. And I'm a little bit of a radical. Let me tell you, I think that women at the high school level, if this is happening, I think that they should walk out in mass and not compete.
But okay? But this is where their heart and soul is, and how do you tell them that?
Oh, I know.
That's what's sad.
But what would be the point, Linda?
Here's where we are off the track. We're off the track with our politicians making these rulings, and our colleges and whoever it is that's making these rulings that these people can compete equally. That is so unfair. And I don't know if it's judges or politicians or legislators. I don't know who's
all who, the above.
Probably all of the above. But that's where they are off track. We, as a country, need to rule by majority, not by minority. And what's happening is we are trying to cater to every little group of people, whether it be LGBTQ or whether it be criminals or whether it be whatever they are. These little groups are getting more rights and more attention than are the majority of people who are out there doing the right thing. And I'm not saying don't give them rights, but they can't have my rights.
Well, okay.
They can't take my rights because they get their rights.
Well, once people become a protected class, right?
Which should not exist, well, in my opinion.
It's okay, and we can talk about that, all day long. But legally speaking, once people become a protected class, it doesn't matter whether they're in the minority. Okay, as far as the law is concerned, they're a protected class. They need to be protected. I think what you're saying is that we need to take we need to make more careful study of this, and then we need to figure out how we can celebrate our differences, but on a level playing field. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I've got nothing against the LGBTQ community whatsoever. I'm sure there's fabulous athletes, and I know there's fabulous athletes.
Sure there are.
Okay, I competed against men that I knew were gay, and they were phenomenal athletes, and I didn't have a problem at all. But they weren't trying to leave the track and field team on the male side and go into the female track and field team and compete against them and blow them off the track.
But what I'm saying is happening is you are giving them the right to do that, and you are taking away the rights from all those other women.
You're exactly right.
That's just not fair.
I think we need to
stop being so darn politically correct and try to get this right where it's in the best interest of all people, not a few people.
And I'm with you there. But let me go back to a statement that I made later, because I want to try it out on you and see what you think. Because, I told you, I'm a little bit more of a radical. And I'm going, you just said a lot. Walk off that darn team en masse and refuse to compete until people change this game. And I think you said something, but my point is, what's the purpose then if you don't do that? What are you accomplishing if you don't do that? Because the end result is going to be the same. Okay, if you stay on that team and you're competing against trans athletes that are biological males that simply say, well, I feel, for whatever reason, okay, I feel that I'm a female, all right, and they blow you off the track and they deny you that opportunity, Linda, tell me, what the heck is the difference?
Well, and you're right there. And you know what? You keep bringing up this point about that just feel that they're female. I don't care if they've had the complete full surgery and are taking estrogen or whatever they're taking. I don't care, because they still have had those benefits at once they hit puberty.
Oh, no, and I agree. Exercise physiology, right, was my degree. And so everything that you quoted that woman said was 100% accurate. All right. But my thing is that where does it stop? Now, they're trying to make it stop with a lawsuit. That might move forward or it may not move forward. But women have still got to figure out, these young high school girls and these college girls have got to figure out, how are they going to push back against this and try to affect change?
Well, I think that they're doing it by the lawsuits.
Well, I think you're doing it by the lawsuit, but at the same time, you're still competing against these people, and they're still wiping you off the track.
Yeah.
And you're still, every single season, you are losing time and important opportunities to move yourself forward through advancement and scholarship. Okay?
Yeah, and I agree.
That's all I'm saying about that. Are you ready to kick it in?
I am ready.